Hello, my name's Florence. Welcome to the Obs Pod. I'm an NHS obstetrician, hoping to share some thoughts and experiences about my working life. Perhaps you enjoy Call the Midwife, maybe birth fascinates you, or you're simply curious about what exactly an obstetrician is. You might be pregnant and preparing for birth. Perhaps you work in maternity and want to know what makes your obstetric colleagues tick, or you want some fresh ideas and inspiration. Whichever of these is the case, and for that matter, anyone else that's interested, the Obs Pod is for you. Episode 74, Blue Light. This episode is going to be about ambulance services and the role that ambulance services play in maternity care. There's a wide variation in the use of ambulance services in maternity. We no longer expect mothers attending in labour to come in via ambulance. In fact, in some ways, we discourage this. We have services that are under significant pressure. And labour, on the most part, isn't an emergency. We can expect women to perhaps make their own way into hospital by other means. Despite this, the ambulance service does remain a key component of maternity services. It's important when we need to transfer women and babies from one hospital to another, perhaps so they can get more specialist treatment in a specialist or tertiary centre. Maybe their baby is going to need surgery, or maybe their baby is very preterm and needs to be born in a particular maternity unit where there's neonatal care available at the right sort of level. Or we could be in a situation where at a home birth there becomes a need to transfer the woman. So all maternity services rely on their local ambulance service. This became very evident during the pandemic, when some of the restrictions that were placed on our services were actually due to the massive pressure that was happening to our local ambulance services. Without an ambulance service, we couldn't sustain and run a home birth service. It simply wouldn't be safe. So ambulance services are something that sometimes we in maternity can take for granted, but are crucial. Hence today's episode and a focus on ambulance services in their relationship with maternity services. In recent years, a number of ambulance services have set out to improve their provision of maternity care, so-called pre-hospital maternity care, by employing consultant midwives. And Amanda Mansfield at the London Ambulance Service was the first of these. And one of my good friends, Dawn Kerslake, has followed her into that role with South East Coast Ambulance Services. The idea of employing a consultant midwife within the ambulance service is very beneficial because they can bring that maternity voice to the proceedings. I've had the privilege of helping Amanda Mansfield and her team at London Ambulance Service when they prepared and ran a Maternity Who's Shoes workshop for members of the London Ambulance Service team. In preparation for the workshop, as with much of the work I do, it was really important for me to understand the key perspectives of the people involved. I'm very experienced at being on the receiving end. A woman, perhaps wheeled into my department, with a flash of green uniform at the head and the foot of the trolley. A handover from those members of staff. But I hadn't had any experience of what is the reality that the ambulance team face out in the community, or that the dispatchers face when they answer the phone. First of all, I was allowed to visit the control room at Waterloo. I was shown the dispatchers that answer the 999 calls and the complicated algorithm they use and the screens that show the location of every vehicle across London. The algorithm is used to determine how urgently an ambulance is required. This is a generalised triage on the basis of A, B, C, airway, breathing, circulation. And whilst, of course, this is a very well-established, sensible way of prioritising things, it doesn't take into account that in maternity we have two patients, the mother and the baby. The woman may appear to be fine, but the baby could be in a life-threatening situation. If you go through the airway, breathing, circulation, well, if the woman's fine, she might be classified as a low priority for an ambulance to be dispatched. In light of this, the Mama Academy and Amanda Mansfield did a lot of work together at London Ambulance to produce a maternity-specific relevant calling card. This was designed with midwives in mind and dispatchers in mind, so that midwives and dispatchers would be using a common language to express how urgently an ambulance was required, whether it's a Category 1 call or a Category 2 call. I've enclosed a link to this work in the programme notes. The urgency of transfer is particularly key in the situation of a home birth, as we know from the birthplace study that around 30 to 45% of first-time mums will require transfer at some point during their labour when planning a home birth, and around 10% or up to 10% of second-time mums will also require transfer during labour or in the immediate postnatal period. Some of these transfers will be able to be in the woman's own vehicle, but some of them won't. In some cases, we will need an ambulance. And for midwives to be able to effectively communicate their concerns is really critical, ensuring that the ambulance arrives in a timely way and that the woman is safely taken to her local maternity unit. Of course, these women have the benefit that there's a healthcare professional, a midwife, already in attendance at that home. But the calls that are much more unpredictable are the ones women make themselves. Often the women I see coming in by ambulance may be someone that's had a baby, gone home, and then a few days later becomes severely unwell. Maybe she's hemorrhaging at home, blood running down her legs in the bathroom. Or she's septic, severely infected, having chills. In those situations, an ambulance picking her up and bringing an unwell woman into us is so important. Of course, some women will be calling an ambulance when they're in labour, or their partner may be. This happens perhaps if the labour's fast and furious, they've got caught short, the baby seems like it might be arriving. About 0.5% of births are outside of hospital in an unplanned way, a so-called BBA, or born before arrival. This might be a baby born on a train, in a shopping centre, or at home, or in a car park. There are many settings, and an ambulance is called. Whilst the woman or her partner or a bystander is on the phone, the dispatcher is the only person from the ambulance service who's available. The dispatchers take enormous pride in these occasions when they're supporting a woman giving birth over the phone. London Ambulance decided in recognition of this to award a stork badge, and this has become a very coveted award. More than 300 have been awarded so far since introduction across the London Ambulance Service, and they're worn with pride on their uniforms. If you take a step back from maternity and look at the ambulance standard quality indicators, you can understand why maternity isn't something that's massively at the forefront of everybody's minds. The quality indicator measures are response times, conveyance percentages, and A&E handover times. There are standards for treatment when someone's had a cardiac arrest outside hospital, or the speed with which someone is taken to a stroke unit or cardiac centre. This makes you appreciate that the ambulance service bread and butter day-to-day work is not maternity. And this means that when maternity cases happen, they're well outside their comfort zone. Looking at the most recent statistics, nationally, in August 2021, there were 29,000 calls a day to our ambulance services, with 12,000 conveyances, that is transport, to A&E a day. The most urgent response time is an average of 8 minutes and 28 seconds, beyond the 7-minute standard that is supposed to be met. With this massive number of calls and huge demand, is it any wonder that our ambulance services are probably not au fait with all the latest maternity care? When I worked with Amanda at London Ambulance, she gave me the Joint Royal College Ambulance Liaison Committee guidance, JRCALC for short, that she'd contributed to in 2017. She had updated and produced a much more comprehensive maternity section of this guidance, 50 pages that might help ambulance teams understand and be aware of a wide range of maternity emergencies, with excellent pictures of not only the equipment with which they may be less familiar, but also how to treat common emergency maternity situations such as cord prolapse, preterm birth, and hemorrhage. This goes some way to hopefully making sure that ambulance teams are more familiar with that maternity journey and those maternity situations, and it's something that they can refer to readily when these incidents happen. I felt as part of my work with London Ambulance, it would be important for me to spend a shift with ambulance colleagues and understand things from their perspective, understand their issues, what their job was like. I hadn't been out on an ambulance since I was a medical student many years ago when we went out for a single shift. And then my main thrill was watching the traffic part like the Red Sea as we blue lighted to emergencies. From the outside, ambulance services seem very glamorous. So this is how in 2018 I found myself at a very early, ungodly hour of the morning at my local ambulance station preparing for a shift. I was taken on board by a good-natured crew of two, one paramedic and one not. They were friendly and helpful, although I did feel they were possibly somewhat bemused as to what an obstetrician was doing joining them for the day. The first job before we left the station was to check the equipment, as well as turning on and off the blue lights. We had to make sure that everything that had been used on the previous shift had been replaced. Then I was given a high-vis jacket and I stepped aboard. Talking to the team I was with, they'd been working for 3 years as an ambulance crew, and in that time they had never seen a birth. Their day-to-day working relationship in general was with A&E. They had excellent rapport with staff, and they often get updates on the people they've brought in earlier in the shift or on previous shifts. They work with one or two local A&Es, although they're the London Ambulance Service, working out of New Malden Ambulance Station. We generally went to Kingston or St George's Hospital. So the idea that the team were roaming across the whole of London simply wasn't true. I quickly found there's a 30-minute target to hand over, and within 40 minutes they need to have completed their paperwork, cleaned the vehicle, and be back on the road. They work extremely hard, 12-hour shifts, 2 weekends on, 2 weekends off. That week they were working 2 long days, 2 late days, which carry on into late nights, having 2 days off and then being back on nights. In any 12-hour shift, they have a 45-minute break, but it's often not taken. And if it is, the final 15 minutes can be interrupted if the vehicle is required. The impression the crew give me is of being monitored and scrutinised every second of the day, from taking a job, time to the scene, time on scene, conveying, that's transporting, or not conveying. If they take too long, control are in touch. They tell me when the service is under pressure, they get so-called welfare checks on the radio, questioning, where are you? Why are you not green? Green being free and ready for the next job. They average 8 jobs in a 12-hour shift. The paperwork is somewhat archaic, a system of little boxes with duplication paper, everything manually done, everything needing to be completed, even if it's not relevant to the case. There seems to be very little autonomy to focus on what's actually relevant to that patient. Blood sugar needs to be tested and recorded, even if it's surplus to requirement and irrelevant to the situation they're facing. It has to be ticked off. If too many are not completed, then they get a telling off, and they have to justify this, despite sometimes it being the common sense option. In my 12-hour shift, I see a panic attack, a fall from bed, a dehydrated person with dementia, a suicidal teenager, a fall from a wheelchair in a woman with multiple sclerosis, a man with a bradycardia, very slow heart rate, and a person with an overdose. I can see that the ambulance team are part carer, part companion, part detective, part emergency service. The way in which they caringly scoop people off the floor, check they're okay, and discuss whether or not they want to go to hospital. The way they give them the once-over. The way we look round the flat to check for medication, open the fridge and check for food, look for folders explaining the relevant care package when an elderly person has dementia and cannot give us all the answers. I see them carefully locking up houses and ensuring that the person has their front door keys safely stowed, re-entering a house to search for an elderly person's spectacles before we leave. An enormous number of little human touches that really impress me. Not conveying, not taking the person to hospital, often is actually potentially the right approach, but seems to require far more paperwork than if they scoop them up and take them to A&E. They are kind and supportive to relatives. They settle people in to A&E and hand over to the nurses. And I can see there's almost no moment to themselves. In our 12-hour shift, we end up eating on the job. Thank goodness I brought a packed lunch. We're able to grab a coffee only because we had to stop for petrol. And I find myself wandering around A&E searching for a toilet to be able to relieve myself before we rush off to the next job. It was truly eye-opening going out with them. And I suddenly realised why maternity is so far from their comfort zone. Such a tiny proportion of their calls are maternity related. So it's no wonder that when one happens, they may dread it because it's something that they are unfamiliar with. They're far more comfortable with an elderly person with dementia than they are with someone giving birth, however straightforward it might be. Although in my shift, we didn't encounter a maternity patient, and so I couldn't share my knowledge, I got a tremendous amount out of it and gained a real perspective of what their day-to-day shifts are like and what's important. What did I learn? Let's think about the zesty bit for that. If you work in a maternity service, when an ambulance crew turn up with a woman, make them welcome. Give them feedback. What have they done well? What could they improve? Give them a pat on the back. They're used to that in A&E. They've got a relationship with A&E. They find coming to the maternity department daunting. They may not know who's in charge. They may not even know where the entrance is. Each interaction builds a relationship between maternity and ambulance services. We can learn so much from one another. Offer them a cup of tea. Show them where the loo is. Those basic essentials really help. And help familiarise the crews with your service. For some time now, we've been doing joint training sessions with our local ambulance teams and our community and home birth midwives. Doing regular skills drills of some of the emergencies that we commonly deal with. They're fun, the teams get to know each other, and it does improve confidence for that moment that they're dreading when they might have to help at the birth of a baby. Understand what you can do as a maternity service to help your ambulance crews. We sometimes have paramedics during their training come and be observers on our maternity unit. And what about our student midwives? Can they do some work with student paramedics so that learning is reciprocal? And what if you're pregnant? What does this episode mean for you? Well, if you or your partner are pregnant, know when to use an ambulance and when not. Most midwives or maternity triage lines will advise you. If you're in labour, know how you're going to get to hospital. And be aware that in a big city where there's lots of choice of maternity services, in the event of an emergency, the ambulance will take you to the closest maternity unit, and that may or may not be where you've chosen to have your baby, where you're booked. Know that in some situations, it is absolutely the correct thing to do to call 999 and ask for help. For some women, this may be because it's a life-threatening emergency. But for some women, it may be because they just don't have access to transport. They could be on their own. Maybe they're unsure what's happening to them. If in doubt, then 999 absolutely may be the correct answer. Ambulance services absolutely have an important contribution to make to maternity services and maternity safety and the care of mothers and their new babies. I do hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the OBS Pod. Feel free to contact me on Twitter at FW Maternity or at the OBS Pod to ask me questions, give me topics for future episodes, or let me know what you think. It's absolutely fantastic when you get in touch. I really enjoy reading your comments. As usual, I've tried to include in the programme notes some extra reading about this particular topic, both for professionals working in maternity care and for pregnant women using services. I'd like to reassure you that although I'm talking about my experiences working in maternity care, I take confidentiality very seriously and do not give any personal information about any of my patients. If you've enjoyed listening, I'd love you to recommend the OBS Pod to friends or colleagues, and please do leave me a review on whichever podcast directory you find my episodes. Many thanks for listening.